In our regular Tuesday news segment, we welcome Luke Nathan Stoddard of the Alt newspaper to discuss this week's news. Welcome, Luke.
Thank you for having me. It's Luke Stoddard Nathan, but it's a tripartite, so it's hard to, you know, kind of. Thank you for having me. I had a story that came out yesterday about some new news in the Joel Abelov case, the Rensselaer County District Attorney Joel Abelov. He has moved to dismiss the indictment against him. This sort of normal kind of pretrial jockeying, but it kind of gave us the first glimpse of sort of what his defense case is going to look like. The case is scheduled to go to trial in June. That's also in the middle of his potential reelection campaign, although he hasn't formally announced that yet. He has a challenger on the Democratic side. So a lot of drama in Rensselaer County right now with that case.
So is he moving this movement? Is this coming from him or his lawyers in defense, or is this a move on the DA's office taking on his behalf?
This is so he has private attorneys basically representing him in this matter. The district attorney Abelov, kind of in his own capacity, I guess you could say, is moving to dismiss the charges against him. And so just a little bit of background about kind of how we got to this point. In April 2016, one night in April 2016, an African-American man named Edson Thevenin was stopped on suspicion of a DUI. He then fled in his car, and he crashed into a concrete barrier near the Collar City Bridge. At that point, then an officer shot him 8 times, killing him. The officer's name was Officer Randy French. The district attorney, Abelov, brought the case before a grand jury. And the grand jury decided not to move charges forward against the police officer, Randy French. There was a sort of odd kind of detail. There's a couple odd details in here. One is that the attorney general's office, acting under an executive order from Andrew Cuomo, was at that time trying to get control of this case. They wanted Abelov's like kind of files. They wanted to take over the case to oversee it. And they got into a kind of jurisdictional. Yes, please.
You mean the state? Attorney General.
The state attorney general, that's right. But anyway, Abelov kind of went ahead and convened the grand jury, which cleared decided not to prosecute Randy French. And the other sort of interesting thing about this grand jury that Abelov convened was that Randy French, usually when a potential defendant is going to come before a grand jury that's kind of pertaining to his own actions, the prosecutor will ask that person to sign an immunity waiver, which basically you give up your right to be immune from prosecution, because if you testify before a grand jury, ordinarily you can't be prosecuted based on what you say, just kind of the way that works. So it had the effect of basically rendering Randy French, no matter what came of that grand jury, he wouldn't have been able to be prosecuted anyway, and he still can't. That's what the AG found. So then after this happened, then the AG finally got control of the case. They went and released a report in early January that found that Randy French's actions, while his story was kind of inconsistent about that he said he had said that he was pinned by the car and then he shot, but actually forensic evidence says that he wasn't pinned. But even though there were some inconsistencies there, and setting aside for a moment a lot of critiques of the Troy Police Department and the way they handled this case that are contained in the report basically said that French had a plausible kind of argument for self-defense, and so the AG couldn't prosecute him.
So even though what he alleged was turned out to not be the case, he was still able to use those circumstances in his defense in terms of not committing murder, but instead acting in self-defense.
They couldn't disprove his sort of his defense, which was that he was acting in self-defense, basically, yes. Even though there were some inconsistencies in what his public story was. Before that report was released, I should mention, the AG indicted Joel Abelov. And they indicted him on 3 counts. 2 counts of official misconduct and 1 count of felony perjury. I'll go through a couple of the charges, and then I'll tell you what the defense is now arguing and why they think that all these charges should go away. The 2 official misconduct charges are related to part of the statute that basically says if you knowingly decline to do something using the power of your that you are lawfully or inherently required to do as part of your job as DA, basically. So in this case, it's alleged that he didn't bring a certain amount of evidence related to the shooting before the grand jury, so the grand jury didn't have that extra information that they might have used to rely on the decision, and then the immunity waiver thing that he declined to get Randy French to sign this immunity waiver before he went and testified. The defense basically says,
which is Abelov.
Mean Abelov and his attorneys and the people representing him or him himself.
I always get confused in this case particular because the people who are prosecuting are not in the.
It's a weird case of attorneys after. Yeah, I mean it's a complicated kind of situation, I guess. They're basically saying that. So the AG has further said in kind of the pretrial jockeying that Abelov basically failed to carry out inherent duties of his office, not lawful duties of his office, kind of like that he just sort of was unethical almost. And that's what the defense is saying, that like you AG are saying that my client is what acted in unethical or whatever, but is that really a crime, basically? Like, you know, these are already handled by organizations. Like lawyers have certain rules that they have to abide by, and you're saying that maybe he wasn't as ethical as he could, but really you're just trying to criminalize what is really prosecutorial discretion. You know, as a sidebar, it's really hard for, if you're accused of a crime and you are later exonerated, it's very hard for you to then sue the DA or go after the DA for like in arguing that he was malicious in prosecuting you or that it was politically motivated. There's a pretty high bar for that. The idea being that it shouldn't be that easy to prosecute a DA because otherwise they'd be really gun shy about bringing cases. I mean, you might make an argument that maybe it should be easier to kind of go after prosecutorial misconduct, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. And they also say, you know, the defense is also saying, look, the AG's report said that Randy French couldn't be prosecuted. And that's the same conclusion that the grand jury convened. So why are we all here now, basically? And then the felony charge is even more interesting, perhaps, because the felony charge is basically that Abelov, when he was testifying before the Attorney General's grand jury, and stay with me here, I know it's a lot of details and whatever, but we can talk, we can kind of break it down a little bit more.
Him testifying before a grand jury in defense of his actions.
Exactly.
In the case that we discussed
earlier. You're right with me, okay. Yeah. They asked him about a previous police shooting, an unrelated police shooting, and they asked him if in that shooting, did Abelov require that cop to waive immunity? They were kind of comparing and contrasting his actions in this case and that previous case. And Abelov, who wasn't the attorney, he had one of his assistants kind of in that previous case handle the grand jury. He said that in that case, the attorney also allowed the cop to not sign the waiver. Right. So in other words, he said the same thing happened in that previous case when in fact that wasn't the case. The cop did sign the immunity waiver. So the cop could have been prosecuted. He wasn't because it was a pretty kind of, it was a more kind of cut and dry sort of case from what I understand. But anyway, so the AG charged him with perjury, right? They said, you lied. You lied about this fact.
So yeah. just to get this clear in my brain. So essentially what Abelov is saying that what he testified under oath in the grand jury said that in a previous case, the AG's office, DA's office, investigating the case, grand jury did not require the police officer in question to sign a waiver of immunity, which would have meant that if that case was less cut and dry, that officer could have potentially been prosecuted for what he said.
He couldn't have been prosecuted. They're saying
he's saying that he did sign the waiver.
Yes.
So he would have been immune.
Yes.
But in fact, he did not sign the
exactly.
waiver. Exactly. And so now the attorney general has been charged with Abelov
about this in the grand jury room at the AG's grand jury back in the present day or closer to present day,
right.
And Abelov said that they whatever. So they charged him with perjury. They said you lied about this fact. But what Abelov's attorneys are now saying is, it was a mistaken memory. Like he just goofed. Like he wasn't there. He didn't really remember. And it wasn't trying to like intentionally mislead anybody. He just got that fact wrong. and they even quote from the grand jury testimony, and they're kind of making an argument that the prosecutor was acting in bad faith, that they were sort of trying to go for a gotcha moment, and that they seized on this one little thing that he kind of messed up on, and then they kept asking, and they really kind of, rather than be like, "Are you sure? Because I have evidence here that suggests otherwise," they just kind of went with it.
Is that the courtesy that's typically offered?
That's a great question, and you know, I didn't have time to kind of look through that'll be my next step, I think, talking to other attorneys to kind of try to assess kind of where this all is at. That's a great question. I think generally I think there's a pretty high bar for perjury cases. It's not something you see tried every day. I guess it will come down to, I guess, if it goes to jury, you know, what does the jury say? Unless this case gets dismissed before then, I guess, you know. It's a pretty, it's a fascinating case. I know that was a lot of legalese, but I think that it, obviously the stakes are pretty high. Like, a district attorney isn't charged with wrongdoing every now and then. Obviously there's also the criminal justice aspect of it. Like, you know, the Justice for D'Ameek movement is kind of ramping up and getting a lot of publicity as well. Certainly the Troy Police Department is under new leadership. And you know, they're trying to think about community policing. There's a lot of pressure on them to kind of reform or kind of rebuild the community's trust. So a lot of issues kind of swirling around in this, and that's why I think it's a really important story.
Indeed. Yeah. It seems really apt.
I have are we on time?
Time.
A couple more minutes. I also had a story last week about how CDTA, they're required to adopt a capital plan, a five-year capital plan every year, I think. And in that, I found a little nugget kind of looking through that capital plan last week that they have kind of set aside for next year about $2.5 million to buy a couple of, or three rather, electric buses. And this would be kind of cool, I think, as a bus rider myself. Apparently, they're quieter. They're more energy efficient. There's less kind of maintenance costs associated with them. Obviously, gas costs are lower as well. They're quieter. There's more space generally in them because the engines aren't as, you know, bulky or whatever. You also have to buy, you know, equipment to charge them and things. And then there's, you know, obviously new training and stuff that comes along with it. And they'd have to seek federal grant funding for it. But it's kind of an interesting, it's also, I should say, sort of provisional. Like, they kind of put it on their wish list, but they're not exactly sure how to pay for it, as a lot of good things are. But I thought it was kind of an interesting little thing that we found in the documents.
Yeah, that sounds cool. A couple of three electric buses zooming silently around.
Yeah, and apparently they still have a fairly small market share of what buses are nationwide. It's like a fraction of a percent currently, although there's a bigger percentage among buses that are ordered. I talked to like a national organization about that, kind of the trend in electric buses. And a lot of other cities across the country have sort of really tried to transition their entire fleets of buses to electric kind of format. CDTA currently has about a third of their buses, I think, are sort of a hybrid of diesel and like electric, I think. So they're sort of quasi more green than just like a full on diesel bus, but that's still only about a third of the fleet. So this is a small step, I guess, but it, you know, and especially because federal budget cuts are always sort of looming, and federal is a big source of CDTA and other bus kind of systems funding. So that's always kind of on the...
It's really an exciting time for all the transitions that are happening. I know just about 2 years ago, CDTA put its schedules on the computer, including I'm standing here at King and River. When is my bus? Has it left already? How soon is it coming?
Right.
And you really can find out, because for... a couple years ago, I had no car for 16 months, and it was so painful to stand out and wonder, did I miss the bus? Is it going to come? If I step away, will it come past me?
Yeah, it's called like real-time arrivals or whatever, and that kind of knowing it makes it easier, I think, to abide the wait, right? If you know when it's going to come, at least you know, and then you can kind of plan accordingly. But if you don't know at all, or you're kind of on the run, you know, it's harder to justify, and you just own a car and drive all the time.
Right. Well, not to put you too much on the spot,
please,
but rumor has it that there's some changes happening at the Alt itself. So given that you're on the radio now, I wanted to give you an opportunity if you wanted to talk about it.
Sure. Well, you know, we're continuing. We have a podcast as well that we do weekly, and that's now kind of televised regularly on public access sort of stations. I don't have the specifics in front of me, but you can look that up online, and you can also watch it online, of course. And then we're also moving to bi-weekly. So to for a variety of reasons. We're still continuing the kind of pace online and whatever, but now it's just every 2 weeks the paper comes out. So that's another change that's happening.
Rad.
Yeah.
Well, we'll look forward to seeing you every week, if only reading you every other week.
Thank you very much
for
having me.
In the paper.
It's always
online.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
Ever insightful and informative. Thank you, Luke, for joining us.